We'll come to order. We're not going to do Senate Bill 34. We're still working on some of the details, so if any of you are here for 34, we're not going to hear that today. We're not going to do 34 today. So we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 407. And could you give us a brief summary of Senate Bill 407, please?
Senate Bill 407 requires that health providers provide patient freedom of choice of health physician and primary care physicians from among...
I can't hear us.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. Is it on?
I can hear you.
Let me try that again. Senate Bill 407 requires that insurance providers provide patient freedom of choice of health physician and primary care physicians from among all health care physicians. It allows health plans to require an enrollee to designate a primary care physician and allows enrollee to select a physician, osteopathic physician, or chiropractic physician as their primary care physician. It requires insurance companies to cover chiropractic physician services.
Okay, we'll call Representative Donaldson and John Schmidt.
You mean Donna Nelson?
You run your name together, Donald.
Donaldson.
Donaldson. It looks like one word, Representative Donna Nelson. Okay, and John, well, go ahead. Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. It's certainly an honor to be here before y'all today. I am State Representative Donna Nelson in my fourth term from District 24, which includes Polk and Yamhill counties. I'm here today because of a chiropractor. About this time, 2 years ago, I left this place thinking I probably wouldn't be back for the rest of the session or whatever it was we were working on at that time because I was in so much pain. So I got in my car and drove straight to McMinnville to the orthopedic surgeon. Up the stairs of the hospital and found out he was moving, but he recommended another one. In fact, the only one at that time, I believe. But anyway, so I went over to the orthopedic surgeon's office. And, of course, had to wait to be seen, so I laid down on the floor. So after 2 hours, I was finally seen and was told that, then I needed to get MRIs and all this kind of thing, and I'm thinking I'm in pain. So then I got pain medicine, lots of it, because I was miserable. So after the MRIs, I started home, and I thought, no, Donna, you ought to just stop by your good friend, the chiropractor, just in case. And I'm so glad I did, because I'm here today. I didn't have to have surgery. Previously in session with all four of you, I had my throat slit and three discs removed with a titanium plate put in and cadaver bone. Well, the same thing was happening at the lower part of my spine, and I had three discs. I wish I'd have known this chiropractor could have done this. It was so magic. I wouldn't have had to have that done when we were in session, I guess it was 4 years ago. But anyway, thanks to this chiropractor in my community, and he has the latest technology, and it's technology that is also being used by the orthopedic surgeons in Portland. It's advertised on Channel 6. You see it about 9 a.m. every morning. So all I'm just saying, it's the same procedure, just different doctors, but they both believe in the same thing. So, Chair Morissette and distinguished members of this Senate Health and Human Services Committee, I want to thank you today for your consideration of Senate Bill 407. This bill is important not only to me and because of the story I just told, but because it gives other Oregonians like myself choices when it comes to health care. For too many years, our citizens have faced difficulties in obtaining insurance coverage for chiropractic service. There are today approximately, I don't know if it's 60 or 70,000 active chiropractic providers in the U.S. All 50 states officially recognize chiropractic as a healthcare profession. Surveys show that when it comes to treating back and neck pain, Oregonians choose chiropractic over other methods of treatment. And half of the world, half of America, half of all working Oregonians have back pain. That in itself ought to answer the question of why are we here today. According to the Archives of Internal Medicine, in a study of nearly 2 million patients, approximately half with chiropractic care and half without chiropractic care found that it worked. Chiropractic care resulted in the following reductions. Costs associated with treating back pain were reduced by 28%. The number of MRI examinations required decreased by 37%. The number of lower back surgeries like Donna Nelson would have had, 32% reduction in those surgeries, which I'm told by this good orthopedic surgeon, who is a friend of mine, that often one surgery in the lower back requires a second sometime within the next few years. And the number of hospitalizations in this research decreased 41%. Now, those are incredible statistics. These are real savings for patients. I'm a living testament to the benefit of chiropractic care, and I'm able to come here and sit before you today free of pain thanks to chiropractic treatment. And I just want you to know it works. Colleagues, I'm fortunate that I have been able to get this treatment. But you know what? I cannot tell you how many individuals I have recommended this to. Reminds me of back when I had mercury poisoning and I was telling everybody what I had to do about it. I just wanted to share with them, wanted them to benefit from it, and thank goodness now we've taken care of that. So now let's take care of the bones, and let's get, or let's join many other states that require health insurance to provide coverage for chiropractic care. It is the most valuable thing I think we could do in this session, because there are a whole heck of a lot, just like me. Okay. I welcome any questions.
Thank you. Yes. Senator George.
Representative Nelson, are you aware that the chiropractic board is out to basically eliminate the machine that you and I both found so miraculous?
Well, I would hope not.
Well, I hope not, too.
Chair Morissette, Senator George, I hope not. You know, it's proven there's something wrong when individuals can just come in and make an abrupt decision without, sharing the issue with the consumer. That could be very wrong to do. Any other questions? Well, I just want to tell you that I have in my possession a 2004 four-year prospective study that reveals chiropractic management cuts health care costs. And the highlights of the study included an analysis of 21,743 member months over a four-year period. And in this one study, you'll once again see they found, in comparison, general medicine and chiropractic, a 52% reduction in drug costs, 43% reduction in MRIs and surgeries, 43% reduction in hospital admissions, 58% reduction in hospital days, and the most important of all, 92.5% patient satisfaction with chiropractic care. So I think, the consumers are the individuals who really need this service. I have for my treatment the form, and I'm going to submit it to Blue Cross Blue Shield and say, why is it that in one other facility, the same piece of medical equipment you will cover for an orthopedic surgeon, same thing, and not here for a chiropractor who's nearby and I can access the care on a regular basis? I had 12 different treatments, and I think it's very important. I also have this study that shows chiropractic care cuts health care costs, reduces surgeries, MRIs, and hospitalizations. And this four-year study studied 1.7 million member patients, 700,000 with chiropractic care and 1 million without. With this, they found 28% reduction in the cost of treating back pain patients with chiropractic care, a 37% reduction in MRIs, 32% reduction in low back surgeries, and 41% reduction in hospitalization. And in this study, 95% patient satisfaction. Now, look what this means to us. It should mean this much to the insurers. $47 million. $47 million savings annually. Estimated if all 1.7 million member patients had had chiropractic coverage. We could have saved $47 million a year. So I'm happy to provide the committee with this data, and I certainly thank you, and I'm proud of all of you and all you accomplish. Please vote for the chiropractor.
Okay. Thank you very much. And if you would leave that with the staff, we'll make copies of it. John Schmitz, Vern, would you like to come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vern Sabo, representing the Chiropractic Association of Oregon. To my right is Dr. John Schmidt, representing the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic. Following my presentation, Dr. Schmidt would like to address the committee as well.
Yes.
Senate Bill 407 would, as Representative Nelson was kind enough to address, provide chiropractic coverage for Oregonians who would seek chiropractic care. The result of that coverage, we believe, based on some of the evidence that she touched upon and many other studies, would result in better care for Oregonians, reduce drug costs, reduce hospitalizations, and reduce spinal surgeries. Back pain and injury, back and neck pain are the two most common musculoskeletal conditions affecting consumers nationwide, and we spend roughly $90 billion a year on low back pain alone, $26 billion of that on medical treatment. 25% of all injured workers nationwide are left off work for a month or more secondary to back injuries. Paradoxically, family physicians and internists, the gatekeepers currently, receive very little training in musculoskeletal medicine or conditions that affect necks and backs, strains, sprains, extremities, and the like. The medical literature is replete with that, and this is not a condemnation against our medical colleagues, which we work with well. It's just simply fact. Their forte is internal disorders, critical care, pharmacology, and surgery. Family physicians' treatment of neck and back pain, we believe, is somewhat of a cost driver in that if you stop and think about your family physician or internist, they generally do not provide hands-on treatment like chiropractic physicians of neck and back. They generally will do one of two things, write a script for medications and or a trial course of physical therapy. They tend to order MRIs much more frequently than chiropractic physicians, and they tend to refer to the subspecialties of orthopedists and neurologists many times when a back is involved. This results in a significant cost shifting, some of which we've seen from the Department of Consumer Business Services. This is 2004 cost shifting statistics since chiropractic physicians were limited back in 1990. While medical physicians received $22.1 million during the first quarter of 2004, chiropractic physicians, in total, 1,250 of us, received just $1.6 million. At the same time, physical therapists receive some three times what the entire chiropractic profession received, and we provide our own physiotherapies. The prescription of drugs within the workers' comp system also totaled more than twice what was paid to chiropractic physicians, and we pride ourselves on not prescribing medications but doing more using more natural methods. And radiologists received $2.4 million. And it is usually standard process for a family physician or internist to have a board-certified radiologist read their films. Chiropractic physicians are, when it comes to back and neck pain, kind of a one-stop shop. We do our own consultations, examinations. We provide our own physiotherapies. We do not prescribe medications. And we read and take our own x-rays. Currently, with the restriction in chiropractic services and workers' comp, we see somewhat of what we believe is also reflected in general health insurance, and that is the totals numbers of MRIs that are taken each quarter, shown here in DCBS statistics. $2 million per quarter in MRIs alone. That represents roughly 2,000 MRIs per quarter. Spinal surgeries, $2.4 million. And independent medical exams, $1.8 million. Medications, drugs, $3.6 million per quarter, with the number one drug class being narcotics at nearly $400,000 a quarter. In the United States currently, there are roughly 7.5 million unnecessary surgical procedures, resulting in excess of 37,000 deaths per year, with the cost of the system being some $122 billion each year. United States medicine tends to specialize in high-tech technology such as MRIs. They tend to order MRIs many as a time, in our opinion, when they are not really clinically necessary for low back and neck. They're used as too often as a screening tool for low back cases, which represents a significant cost of the system. In JAMA in 2004, they related a close correlation to excessive ordering of MRIs as a screening tool to increased incidence of spinal surgery, and this is secondary to incidental disc bulges. Again, as you'll see, and Representative Nelson referred to some of the studies that show reduction in spinal surgeries, hospitalization, and drug costs. In 2004, the Oregon Health Forum, again, there was a documentation and reference to the inappropriate and excessive ordering of MRI and how that is increasing. The MRI costs were up 28% between 2000 and 2005 generally. Providence Health Systems MRIs were up some 388%, and family physicians and internists are ordering more and more of special imaging as a screening tool. We would say in the chiropractic profession, you order special imaging only when the history presenting symptomatology and your exam findings suggest that it is clinically necessary. It should not be used as a screening tool. Unnecessary back surgeries, as per the VA, estimated in 1995. That there are roughly 44,000 unnecessary back operations resulting in $484 million per year within the VA system. Chiropractic physicians and chiropractic treatment is now covered through the VA and Department of Defense for all active duty personnel. Spinal fusion surgery has been on the rise since 1996. And represents a tremendous cost to the healthcare system. There was a 77% increase in spinal fusion between 1996 and 2001, with the average hospital bill being more than $34,000, and this doesn't include the surgical fees. Again, as you'll see later, we believe we can prevent, and the studies show we can prevent many of these surgeries. It's shown in the same study that 75% of all fusions were for degenerative changes, disc herniations, and spinal stenosis. There are and have been studies showing replete examples of the notion that, in fact, there's a financial incentive to do a fusion as opposed to more straightforward surgeries or simplistic surgeries such as a simple discectomy for removal of a disc. Combining that with a fusion or interbody titanium fusion cages like the instrumentation actually results in increased costs, but has driven a new industry known as the device industry. And again, we believe this is where significant savings with chiropractic coverage, chiropractic services would be realized. Unnecessary low back fusion surgeries, the Cochrane Scientific Review. This is a voluntary international collaborative group of scientists that review any particular medical procedure and then report whether on the efficacy of that particular procedure. The Cochrane Review found in 1995 that there is no accepted evidence of the efficacy of any form of fusion for degenerative lumbar spondylosis, arthritic spines, back pain or instability. And instability, especially in the workers' comp systems, is one of the number one reasons why surgery is performed. Instability refers to a sloppy segment, hypermobility, excessive movement, which is presumably painful. They also estimated the cost of these surgical fusions back in 1995 totaled some $100 billion. Unnecessary back surgeries relative to the new implants, the new artificial discs. It is the spinal implant device market is now a $2 billion a year industry with a growth of 18 to 20%. And the newest instruments are the artificial implants, expensive. The efficacy and safety of these studies to date have been disappointing, and just recently, Oregon Health Systems, the managed care organization I belong to, Workers' Comp, has just put a moratorium on the artificial disc. Those surgeries cost upwards, depending on where it's performed, upwards of $100,000 per level. Spinal fusion surgeries, 2004 statistics, there was 297,400 primary, that means initial first-time surgeries, and 16,400 revisions or secondary surgeries in all areas of the spine, neck, mid-back, low-back. This study found there was 145% increase in primary and 145% increase in revisions or secondary surgeries since 1990, with 190% increase in lumbar fusions specifically and a 230% increase in lumbar fusions in older age groups over the age of 60. And again, what we would tell you is that this represents a tremendous cost to the healthcare systems, and much of which with our treatment has been shown we can prevent. This is a province MCO study done within the workers' comp system where they reviewed 75 cases between 1997 and 2000 of the outcomes of lumbar fusion. And the results were appalling, quite frankly. 61% of these cases had never returned to work 1 year after surgery. And it's important to keep in mind that percentage. 61% did not return to work 1 year after surgery, especially in the next study that I'll show you. 56% continued to need narcotics for pain control following the fusion. 56% indicated the pain was the same or worse following the fusion. 64% said they could do fewer activities since the lumbar fusion. 63% said they were highly disappointed or not pleased with the surgery, and 47% said if they could go back in time, they never would have had the surgery in the first place. But most important, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is this last figure. 25% had additional surgeries since the original fusion. Just to give some semblance of cost, at least in the workers' comp system, now the cost in general health insurance would be different, but it's substantial. We'd assume that the cost to the private insurance carriers would be somewhat similar with the associated disability and direct medical costs. The estimated cost of one unsuccessful back operation resulting in total permanent disability is estimated at $1.2 million. This next study, which is a review of 1,000 workers receiving lumbar fusion, showed even similar results, which were even more statistically significant. So the group of 1,000 workers who had lumbar fusion, of those, 600 had a single operation. 4 years post-surgically, 71% had never returned to work. 400 of the patients had multiple surgeries. Of those 400, 3 years post-surgically, 95% had never returned to work. 800, it's roughly a little over 800 of these 1,000 workers never returned to work following the lumbar fusion. Now, 800 times 1.2 million, at least in Albany, Oregon, is real money. It's just short of $1 billion in this study. Interestingly, Oregon leads the nation in back surgeries. In fact, Bend, Oregon is the spinal surgical capital of the United States. There's more spine surgeries occurring per capita in Bend than in any other city in the United States. based on the author you read, we believe that we can prevent anywhere from, as the two studies represented, Nelson indicated, some 37% to as high as 80% of spine surgeries, depending on what the pathology is. Interestingly, it's been shown that conservative care has been shown to be just as effective as spinal fusion for instability, sloppy segment. Aggressive rehab exercises, and as chiropractic physicians, we would combine that with spinal manipulation, not to the instability or the sloppy segment, but to any fixations above or below. And what we found in these lumbar instability cases is that the sacroiliac joint, your hip joint, which has normal joint play, actually many times there will be a fixation of one of those sacroiliac joints, which will increase the shearing stress at the instability. The take-home message is conservative care is just as effective as lumbar fusion. No, we don't fix these people. We manage them. But the long-term outcomes favor a conservative approach, which is what chiropractic physicians can offer. Nationally, unnecessary hospitalizations, which we can also reduce, as we've seen, and we'll see here a little later on, there's roughly 8.9 million unnecessary hospitalizations per year. At what cost? I don't have that figure, but it would have to be considerable. We do know that the cost of hospital-acquired infections run right at $5 billion. Adverse drug events, the proper drug taken, the prescribed, taken properly by the patient, they just have a reaction, they have to be treated, and that cost is $12 billion in the hospital setting. And general hospital and unnecessary surgeries, all forms, all types, also run into the billions. Adverse drug events, again, the proper drug taken, prescribed, but the patient simply has a reaction. Those have to be treated. Now, if we can, as we showed, we'll show later on, and Representative Nelson referred to, if we can reduce drug costs or drug usage by 25 and 50%, would have a direct impact on adverse drug events and their subsequent indirect costs. Drug side effects, again, along the same lines, adverse drug events. 1 in 4 people suffer side effects from the more than 3 billion prescription drugs filled. This is in 2002. And germane to hospitalization and those costs, 5% of over 1 million hospital admissions per year are the result of those drug side effects, which represent a tremendous cost to the system, and where we can impact those costs and quality of patient care. Our medical colleagues, the family physicians, interns, tend to use the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs as their first line of treatment for back and neck. And unfortunately, those are the type of drug class that have some of the highest incidence of adverse drug events. So we believe chiropractic physicians are part of, can be part of the solution. Part of that is the reality that there's a coming family physician shortage, medical family physicians. Fewer and fewer medical students wish to enter into primary care. Last year, showed that only 19% of first-year medical students wish to go into primary care. Most are going into the more lucrative subspecialties. Chiropractic physicians are well-trained and well-suited to be primary care physicians. Our training is extensive in the diagnostic area and treatment interventions. I won't go into each one of those, but the minimum is 4,200 hours over the four-year period. Chiropractic physicians can continue their learning with the postdoctorate board certifications, 3 4-year programs in orthopedics, neurology, sports medicine, and the like. And it has been shown that we can treat and handle 90% of the 60 most common conditions that enter into a primary care setting. Of those 60 most common, number 8, the 8th most common condition is back symptoms. 16 is headaches, 20 is neck symptoms, 24 is leg symptoms, and 27 of the 60 most common is low back symptoms, the things that we treat every day. In fact, one of the most common reasons for Oregon consumers to visit a primary care physician is for a musculoskeletal complaint. Back pain is one of the most costly health care conditions, again, $90 billion per year. Spinal manipulation has now been shown to be the single most effective treatment for low back pain. There are more high-quality clinical trials supporting the efficacy of spinal manipulation than any other known medical intervention, and chiropractic physicians perform 95% of all spinal manipulations in this country. These are the studies that Representative Nelson were referring to, and I won't belabor them. Again, they show significant savings in hospitals, reduced hospitalizations, spinal surgeries, special imaging, primarily MRI, with high patient satisfaction. This 2004 study that appeared in the flagship journal of the American Medical Association's Archives of Internal Medicine was a four-year retrospective trial. This other study that Representative Nelson referred to is a first-in-the-nation four-year prospective trial comparing chiropractic versus medical treatment within the system, and again showing huge savings in hospitals, reduction in hospitalizations, drug costs, and surgeries. We've done many things, and I'm not going to go through this list. You have it in front of you as far as bringing accountability and to chiropractic practice. I'll paraphrase. It includes evidence-based guidelines, a strong board of examiners and peer review, evidence-based outcome assessment, administrative rules to address the issue of when curative chiropractic treatment should end, and we're currently working on evidence-based best practices as well. In summary, concerning the direct costs and indirect costs of adverse drug events, in one of the studies we showed a 51.8% reduction in direct drug costs, but that would certainly result in significant savings in the indirect costs of adverse drug events with chiropractic management. Unnecessary MRIs, I have no idea how many millions per year, but it would be substantial that we could save. Unnecessary and unsuccessful back operations represent a huge cost to the system, both in human terms and in financial terms. We, in those two studies I showed you, showed a reduction of 37 and 32% reduction in MRIs and a 32% reduction in back operations. Unnecessary hospitalizations and the adverse drug reactions, if we can reduce hospitalizations as in these two studies from 43 and 41%, the cost savings to the insurance industry and to the general health systems would be substantial. Unnecessary duplication of physical therapy, physiotherapy. We perform our own in-house physiotherapy. Again, provide our own radiology and consultation examinations. We're a one-stop shop, and again, we could save the system a tremendous amount of money. In conclusion, when consumers are given a choice and choose chiropractic management, it results in improved patient care, especially for musculoskeletal complaints, neck, back types of conditions, with cost savings to businesses, which are substantial. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that completes my testimony. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Are you aware of any surgeons who refer their patients to chiropractors?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. My surgeon did.
Yes.
Questions? Senator Berger.
Well, thank you for that. Those are some certainly impressive statistics, but I think it's a serious indictment of your medical colleagues. I think that there is suggesting financial gain involved for the motivation. Also, poor choice of drugs. So those are pretty serious indictments. And I guess if that's not true, then why wouldn't all doctors refer people rather than doing surgery? Why wouldn't it just be a referral to chiropractic, since you have these impressive figures?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, your question is, why wouldn't spinal surgeons or general practitioners...
If it's not for financial motivation, then why wouldn't it just... If the patient is of the concern, and with the track record that chiropractors have in being successful in this, why wouldn't there be a constant referral to people in your profession?
Well, there, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berger, there are spinal surgeons that refer frequently to chiropractic physicians. In my hometown, I receive referrals from a surgeon in Corvallis and in Albany, and I treat one of them. But that's not universal. There are many spinal surgeons that simply do not refer to chiropractors out of bias, and a lot of that bias is ignorance to our training and what it is that we do and the evidence that supports that. But there are surgeons that, in fact, do refer. A lot of the resistance to refer to our profession is based on a lack of knowing what our training is and what conditions we can handle and what conditions we cannot handle.
Follow up, Mr. Yes. Chair. I suppose not too many refer, or you wouldn't have these statistics. In other words, with the kind of surgeries that they're doing and performing. And I don't know how many people. I imagine most everybody has a back injury because I had one, and it was like Job's comforter. Everybody that I saw, I was easing up out of the chair, so they wanted to know what the matter was. I was very sorry I told them that I had a bad back at the time that I had injured it, because I had to hear everybody's back injury story. But I think that... I'm just troubled by this, if that will make any sense to you.
It does. We are as well.
I guess I'll finish my... Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have another...
No. I'm finished.
I did have back surgery. I did have hip replacement. I did have a problem. I went to three... My physician did not refer me. I asked him to refer me to a chiropractor. He said, no. Instead, I'll refer you to... physical therapist. I went to three different physical therapists. Mm-hmm. None of them, while they diagnosed the problem, they said one leg is shorter than the other one and you don't have any strength in your right leg, which was true. One person said, put some post-it notes in your shoe and that'll solve the problem. One of my physicians.
Mr. Chairman.
My medical physician said that.
Post-it.
Yeah, post-it notes. And so I finally did go to my good friend, the chiropractor. And I think Regents did cover part of that cost. And within, I would say, 30 seconds, they measured, adjusted my leg, measured, and said, yeah, your right one leg is shorter. Did a strength test on my right leg, and he said, you're right, you have no strength in that leg. They did an adjustment, remeasured, retested, and it was fine. That was a 30-second fix on that situation. So I went to my surgeon. I happened to see him one day, and I thought I would scandalize him by saying, hey, my chiropractor fixed it. He said, I send people to chiropractors. A lot of people come to me, and I don't want to operate, so I send them to a chiropractor. So my personal experience is that in 30 seconds, my problem was fixed, and my visits to three different physical therapists did not help me at all. Senator George.
I was going to say, it sounded like you were going to go to put a lime in the coconut and call me in the morning with that one. But Mr. Sabo, as you were going through the numbers, I'm thinking I'm the poster boy for this. I had, not many years ago, a nurse called me up and said, Gary, knock off your drinking. And I said, I don't drink. She said, your liver function is almost zero. And it turned out it was the a little bit of pain pills, but some of the anti-inflammatories they were giving me, and I reacted and shut down my liver. And in fact, once in a while, if you guys will notice, I'll turn a little yellow even today. I am getting recovery. But one of the things that my chiropractor suggested was he might want to think about some nutritional issues. And so I began to do that and have had a substantial recovery within the liver function. But it's the same thing. I was scheduled twice for back surgery. And when I went the second time back to the back surgeon in Tualatin, he said, you know what? Chiropractic care seems to be working. I don't think I'll be seeing you probably again. The good news was it was a kind of a halfway friend of mine, but he was honest enough to recognize that I was scheduled for major back surgery, and now I don't need a major back surgery. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing that we don't provide an alternative, because I asked recently about a treatment that was being given to me by a chiropractor and said, how come this isn't covered by insurance? You know, I'm having to write a check for this. And the answer is because you don't have this bill. And so I think it's very, very interesting that so many of us have had that kind of positive experience with getting what was was completely incapacitating condition to the point that you can function daily. And I think that's pretty amazing. I'm going to ask some other professionals that are going to be up here in a minute, but I just wanted to get that out because I had some numbers I heard over the weekend, so I'll ask those of someone else. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other comments? Okay. Dr. Schmitz.
As Dr. Sable introduced me.
Introduce yourself, please.
I'm John Schmidt. I'm a chiropractor in Silverton, past president of Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic, and currently the chairman of the legislative committee. And before I promised Vern I would try not to speak extemporaneously, but I do want to say one thing in response to Senator Verger. I don't think that Dr. Sable's intent was to create an indictment of the medical profession. I mean, you know, these people saved millions of people's lives also. What he was trying to show, and what we're trying to show, is that, and it's not necessarily the medical profession's responsibility to know everything we do, and we're not looking to, I mean, it'd be nice to be able to educate them more. All we want to do with this bill is level the playing field so we have an equal competitive edge, and with equal competition, these costs will go down because people will be able to have choice. You know, it's America, we're free to make choice, but when you have a family of four that's got 20% of their income coming out of their paycheck paychecks for insurance, and that insurance doesn't allow them the choice, they don't have any discretionary income left to choose. And so it's, you know, a lot of people say, well, if they don't like it, you know, let them go and pay cash. And some people can afford to do that, but some people can't afford to pay cash. And I treat a lot of people who can't, and somehow they try to make that work for a while, but I see an ongoing discontinuation of any kind of supportive care with reoccurring flare-ups, which then forces them back into some kind of acute care, back into the emergency room. And if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Sabo's figures were that one unsuccessful back surgery at $1.2 million was, I think, the same cost of what the chiropractic benefit under workers' comp paid to all the chiropractors in Oregon was for a quarter, or was that a year?
One quarter.
It was one. Okay, so basically, the size of our participation in the existing system, both in the work comp arena and in the indemnity insurance arena, is very, very minimal. Because a lot of people who come to chiropractors just simply have been pushed into the position where they are paying cash, but it's difficult. A lot of people would be able to avail themselves of that service for a reasonable period of time and see if it worked. If it works, it's going to save somebody a lot of money. If it doesn't work, they've still got the option of going to surgery or having an MRI, and quite often we're the people that refer them there, but not as much as the standard of, you know, if you go in and you have an exam and you get a referral for an MRI before you have orthopedic tests or a conservative therapeutic trial of something else for a while, whether it be massage, PT, acupuncture, whatever. It's like in our country we're doing the most radical thing first and the more conservative thing last, and that just doesn't make good physical, it's not physically responsible. So, you know, we're not trying to change the medical profession, we're just trying to level the playing field, if that makes sense. But I would like to read this. I think it covers some of what I just said, but it's not meant to be humorous, but I'm going to start off talking about vitamin C because, and I think that's appropriate because you were talking about vitamin C. And I remember this from being a young child, not a young child, but a teenager, and having a back injury, and my father putting me on vitamin C, and I thought, what is he doing? And then years later in chiropractic school, read some studies about vitamin C and have used it ever since, and find it to be an incredible anti-inflammatory with no side effects and many side benefits. As early as the 1950s, so this is 60 years ago, scientific evidence revealed the benefit of vitamin C in treating low back pain. This simple nutrient has been used ever since as a means of reducing inflammation and detoxifying muscles of the lower back. Of course, it detoxifies muscles of the entire body, which was substantiated by a study at OHSU about 8 years ago. This is but one example of simple, low-cost, adjunctive therapies recommended by alternative health care providers as an alternative to pharmaceutical drugs with the side effects. Numerous other therapies, in addition to the well-known chiropractic manipulation, adjustment, or decompression, like you experienced, are used in chiropractic offices with significant effectiveness and far less cost than many traditional medical procedures. As with vitamin C and its contrast to the significant, more expensive drug therapies, more conservative measures reflect a great cost savings, which is the reason why many cash-paying patients choose alternative care such as chiropractic over traditional medical care. And that's been confirmed in several studies coming out of Harvard University, where they've shown over the last 10 years ever-increasing cash money paid to alternative health care providers, which I think is in excess of 58% now. Oregonians choose alternative care far more than traditional medical care when they have a choice. And that's what this bill is about, is giving a choice. In the past 15 years, choice has slowly been eroded by ever-increasing complex system of health care reimbursement. Both in the workers' comp arena and in the personal health insurance category, not only has choice of type of care been limited, but choice of provider in any one category has been made difficult, if not impossible, creating confusion and reducing the quality of care. And I have to stop here and clarify this. In my office, on a weekly basis, for the last 10 to 15 years, patients complained to me not as much about not being able to get chiropractic care, but not having their choice of their own MD. They want to find a medical doctor, medical provider that they have, if you want to call it, good energy with, good rapport with, that they feel is concerned for them, and that choice, even within that parameter, is being blocked. It's being blocked within our profession, but it's being blocked within the medical profession also. Patients have to switch care providers often, sometimes every year with the change of contract or a new MCO, or a new managed care organization. They are often dissatisfied that they have no choice. Doctors have gotten to the point where compliance with regulation has taken priority over a patient's well-being. And I say that not to be vindictive of the medical profession, but also the chiropractic profession. I know chiropractors and medical doctors who have complained to me and said, my God, I spend more time, more money, and more energy going to seminars trying to figure out coding, billing, how to get paid, how to comply, than I do learning how to treat patients. And that's wrong. It's just, we've created this bureaucratic, complex system that's taking doctors away from caring and getting them focused on billing. In the competitive marketplace, quality is a direct result of competition. Competition has been largely eliminated by the removal of choice of doctor and choice of provider type. The managed care panels have become a method of precluding those who wish to excel in quality care and include those providers willing to submit to regulatory bureaucratic complexities, thus making them preferred. The intent of establishing the MCOs 16, 17 years ago, because I was very active and was here listening to the testimony about the MCOs. The intent of establishing the MCOs was supposed to have been the exclusion or control of physicians providing excessive care and billing excessive fees for that care. In other words, it was supposed to reduce costs. I maintain it hasn't done that. I think it's increased costs because of the huge amount of monies that are going to management rather than the caregiving. Because of the extreme limits, the vast majority of the chiropractic profession has been precluded, giving a very limited few the single access to patients. Examples of this exclusivity is reflected in the fact that in many of the MCOs, the percentage of licensed chiropractors in the metropolitan areas of Oregon run from as low as 0% upwards to maybe only 20%. In other words, in the seven major areas that were surveyed, almost all of the managed care organizations had a maximum of 20%, and many of them were 0% chiropractors participating in the group. There was only two exceptions, that being Kaiser Permanente in Portland and Kaiser Permanente in the Salem-Kaiser area, being 32% and 40%, but still This is not a significant participation. Numerous areas have virtually no chiropractors belonging to the managed care groups. If I'm not mistaken, at least in the work comp system, the managed care organizations are required by law to include chiropractic care. And when indeed they're asked why there aren't any, they say there's no applications. So I had a survey done after I heard that testimony, and I asked for a survey to be done through Dr. Michael Freeman, who's a staff person at Oregon Health Sciences University. 1,189 chiropractors, nearly every chiropractor in the state of Oregon was surveyed, and the response rate was 28%. It indicated that even though many of the chiropractors who did respond to that particular survey belonged to an MCO, they were experiencing significant difficulty working within the system, and one of them came back to me from one chiropractor that is a friend of mine, and I think he knew I was had something to do with the survey, and he sent it back to me, and he says, I joined four MCOs. I live on the edge of the largest industrial area in Portland, and in the last year I've gotten 8 workers' comp cases. And so basically, the MCOs are not working for him at all. That's like a case every 6 weeks. And I'm sure there's many people injured in that area that could benefit from his care. He's an excellent chiropractor. Senate Bill 407, if passed, will level the playing field, bringing back to a priority quality of care rather than the priority of compliance with excessive regulation. In addition, it will bring back trust and caring. And by that I mean with a medical doctor or a chiropractor, a primary healing element has to be faith, confidence, and belief. And years ago they referred to that as the placebo effect, and it's not a placebo effect at all. It's caring. And if you care about the patient and that patient's the priority, the patient heals better no matter what the therapy. Senate Bill 407 will not restrict, and I think this is important for you to understand, if you read the very end of this bill, it will not restrict an insurance carrier's ability to set fee limits, practice parameters, or have utilization reviews. This bill will allow for reasonable management and cost controls, but will still provide for patient choice. That concludes my remarks. If you have any questions.
Good question.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. This is a mandate for insurance companies to pay for chiropractic services. And I am wondering why in Section 6 of the, I think it was Section 6, that you have excluded basically public PEB and Medicaid, basically.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monos Anderson, you're correct. Which
section? Six of the
on
bill.
On second page?
On the third page.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, third page. Yes, we've been discussing that, and we have been discussing an amendment to include us in that as well, that we would also be, would not apply to chiropractic coverage within Medicaid.
If we're leveling the playing field, I was just wondering why you didn't want to level the playing field. Does PEB already offer chiropractic services?
Well, Medicaid's federally regulated. We would then have a conflict of law, wouldn't we? Where we got an Oregon law conflicting with the federal law, and that would be created.
I see some
legal
people nodding, but I see Rocky nodding no.
We're going to have him up next.
Okay. All right. I'll wait for all the testimony since we're going a long time. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Representative Barnhart, did you wish to testify?
Yes, sir.
And Rocky, we would like to have you come up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from Central Lane and Linn Counties. And I came today to talk about two or three issues that I think are related to this bill, and that are related to my personal health. And it's interesting, after I arrived here, I heard two members of the committee describe their interactions with dealing with their own health, having to do with medical doctors on the one side, the medical systems on the one side, chiropractic doctors of chiropractic on the other, and the issues that have arisen in dealing with their own health. And it's interesting that I have had very similar experiences. There must be something about the Upper Willamette Valley that leads to one leg being longer than the other, because I had a similar problem, Mr. Chair, and I wonder if that might be an explanation for the problem. But in any event, I'm a psychologist, what we often affectionately refer to as one of those other weird professions, and so I'm familiar with the problem of members of other professions being unaware of the background, education, training, and experience of a member of one of the learned health professions, and therefore being unable to adequately utilize the services of those professions for the treatment of patients who need that care. And I'm not here to talk about psychology today, but rather the interface between medicine and chiropractic. I'm convinced that my own health is dependent, at least in part, on my consultation both with medical doctors and with doctors of chiropractic, because of the different rather minor aches and pains that I have as a 60-year-old man. And that, in fact, I live much better now because I am free to consult with both, and I do. I depend on medical doctors for a part of my physical health, and a doctor of chiropractic for another part. They both are very good at what they understand and know, and they're really lousy at what they don't understand and know. Fortunately, the stories that you've described indicate that at least some of both professions understand that statement that I just made and make appropriate referrals. Unfortunately, others don't. And the bill before you today will help to deal with one part of that issue. I should say that as we look at the issue of whether doctors of chiropractic ought to be reimbursed in this situation, I think it's also important to note that that as part of their training, education, and experience, they are qualified to take a patient off the street, to do a diagnosis, and to make an appropriate referral to the appropriate medical doctor when that's appropriate for treatment. And I think that's a very important thing for the committee to be aware of, that they are qualified based on their background, training, education, and experience to make that kind of referral. The proposed legislation would require health insurance carriers to cover chiropractic services, as well as giving Oregonians the freedom to choose their doctor. By doing so, the insurance companies will not only provide better care for consumers suffering from back and neck injuries, but also reduced medical costs. Back and neck pain are some of the most costly health conditions, and chiropractors are well suited to treat these conditions. Studies have shown that when chiropractors manage cases, there is a reduction in drugs, MRIs, spinal surgery, hospitalizations, all resulting in better patient care at significantly reduced health costs. Standard physicians are not well equipped to deal with musculoskeletal problems, except in the most extreme cases that do in fact require surgery, where of course most medical conditions require traditional medical care, while others require chiropractic care. As I've already indicated, I require both for my own health, and I'm very pleased with the care that I've gotten from two different physicians who have been beneficial to me. As a psychologist who's fairly well educated and well trained, I'm able to be my own physician and to balance off the advice that I get from my two physicians, and I think to maintain my health well. Other people are less fortunate. Long term, we need to be working on that problem as well. Medical doctors need to understand better what doctors of chiropractic can do, and I think the reverse is also true. One final comment. My insurance is a very good coverage. It's one that the members of the committee are familiar with, and it covers my treating with both. and for which I am very grateful. I think other Oregonians should have the same benefit. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
You know what they say about doctors healing themselves, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do. unfortunately, I'm stuck with that because of the limitations of both professions that I treat with.
Any other questions or smart aleck comments?
Just, it's got to be a smart comment for me. Nobody knows the car like the driver, and I think that's the case. Is that literally, I have confidence in my MD, I have confidence in my chiropractor. And I make a decision now, because of my experience, is which one I'm going to go for what different issue. I think I have a right to make that choice.
Thank you, Senator. You've described quite well what I do myself.
Thank you. Thank you. Rocky, would you come up and explain why you're nodding your head this way and that way? As a neutral kind of a guy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, which does not provide chiropractic services. I'm also a member of the PEB board, where we do provide chiropractic services under our benefit plan. I'm also the administrator for the Office of Private Health Partnership, which administers the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, where we provide subsidies to a variety of people and a variety of plans that may or may not have chiropractic services. And I'm here in a neutral role because I have all these different pieces, and I wish that I wasn't here right now because I don't think anybody can win. You're going to hear one side and the other side, and everybody's fighting. Doctors are bad. Chiropractors are bad. Costs are going to go up. Costs will go down. And I don't have the foggiest idea other than I'm very concerned about sections 2, 3, and 4 of this bill because I think it opens some doors. In terms of providers and services, the value and ability of managed care plans to keep people within networks to reduce costs. And the only thing I'm really here to say today is to ask for some caution as you move forward, to really perhaps pull some folks together, not to look. Mandates are simple. You're going to do it from anecdotes. You're going to do it from people are going to tell you one cost or the other. But what I'm worried about is that you make a decision on this bill that may impact the market in a larger capacity in terms of exposure to higher costs and in an era when we're really trying to some degree, very frankly, control access to a variety of services so that we can control costs. So I'm not here to speak in favor or against the bill, but only to throw a note of caution up into the wind to proceed slowly because I think there's some really confusing components to this bill that, quite frankly, when we read as our staff, we were trying to figure out what does this do to OMIP, what would this do to the Healthy Kids Program under the governor's proposal, what would this do under FEOP in terms of some of the group coverage, would it increase the cost, decrease, and very frankly, we couldn't tell. And because we couldn't tell, that made us pause for a moment and say, we ask you to pause and take a close look at this. On the Medicaid side, because I know a question came up here, and Janine, were we correct? Chiropractic services, as well as a variety of other services, used to be sprinkled throughout the list. And it was you, the legislature, I believe. Are you in a cup? Ah, good. Gets me off the hook.
Hi. For the record, Janine Smith, the administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research. And for the record, the chiropractic services are on the prioritized list of health services under specific diagnoses. And they are still covered under OHP Plus, the one for categorically eligible. But there was a decision during the OHP standard cut days to eliminate it for OHP standard clients for chiropractic in a cost-cutting measures when we were in our deficit.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. That was the point that I wanted to make, because if this then is a mandate and then we don't have revenue like we did, we won't have the negotiating ability with contracts and because the utilization would always be the same, and we wouldn't be able to negotiate contracts with the various insurers. Am I interpreting that right?
Well, Ms. Chair, Senator Moe Sanderson, I believe this bill does exempt the OHP Medicaid program from this particular mandate, but our concern would be, let's take OMIP, for example. We use a preferred provider network. We use a third-party administrator. We think we have very good contracts or reimbursement to those providers. But this kind of opens up and allows people to go anyplace. I'm not talking about just the chiropractic mandate, but look under Sections 2 and 3, where it kind of says you can go out to a whole bunch of providers, medical, dental, vision, as long as the benefit piece is covered. What if they go to a provider that charges $100 for a visit rather than the contracted $40 for a visit, and they're outside of the network? What happens to the balance billing? Does that mean all of a sudden, by passing this bill and giving people the impression they can go shopping to any place, do we put some patients or members in a position of being balance billed for funds that they didn't realize they were going to be billed for? I don't know the answer to that. I just know that this bill raises questions about that. I don't want to argue the value of chiropractic services. That's one you guys can make that decision. What I am concerned about is some of the slippery slope pieces of the legislation in the first few sections, I think, that kind of expose managed care plans, PPO networks, and insurers to picking up additional costs as well as members.
Follow up on
that? Yeah.
Just follow up then. In my mind, it looked like the reason that maybe we took PEB and OHP out of it is because it wouldn't go to Ways and Means. Because then when it would go to Ways and Means, we'd have to get a fiscal, and then they would actually come up with how much it really would cost us. And maybe it's a hard way to get the numbers, but to me, this is a way to start somewhere else. And not have that fiscal come up. I don't know.
Ms. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, we probably should have put OMIP in there because they asked OMIP for the fiscal impact, but we only had about a day because it got scheduled rather fast, and we said it's so complex, it's not the chiropractic coverage, it's the impact on the rest of the market, that we just didn't feel we could give you a good figure in that short of time.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rocky, I'm trying to interpret what you're saying. Are you concerned that an HMO may lose control of their panel?
Could you, Mr. Chair?
An HMO has a panel. They have their panel of providers. They're contracted, and this potentially could open it up to where they no longer have that control and that contractual ability.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I think there are some folks back here representing managed care organizations that can probably answer that better than I can. Our concern was there's issues around you can change your primary physician anytime. You start to destroy the concept of that, the managed care gatekeeper. You just want to change primary care physicians anytime I want a dental primary care physician. And if the dental is one of the benefits, I think the law reads that you can do that. And I think there are some unintended consequences separate from just mandating a coverage with the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rocky, I too don't want to debate the merits of chiropractic care. But looking at the presentation, there was quite a discrepancy in what it cost if you went to a chiropractor as opposed to going to surgery, certainly. So it would seem to me that if you're looking at a cost reference, which is what I'm interested in, that it would be a savings. So the bill seems to have gotten convoluted with other things. Because what it seems to me is what they were asking for is just to be able to have a choice. And so if there's just a choice of whether you're going to, for only those kinds of diagnoses of back and neck and so forth, and that there is a cost savings, it seems to me that's fairly simple. But if it's going to be convoluted and involved and have some people in and some people out, and then including and expanding to vision and so forth, I think that's where the confusion is. Am I wrong? Tell me.
Ms. Chair, Senator Berger, it's confusing. I don't like to make decisions about whether to include or not include benefits based on a presentation, because one of the things we're finding out with the medical community is we need evidence. And that's what the Health Resources Commission and the Health Services Commission really do. So I'll let Janine Smith answer that piece.
That's great. Yeah. Janine?
Thank you.
Okay. You can step back, Rocky, now.
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger. I know that when things are put on the prioritized list, there's a methodology in which the Health Services Commission determines whether to cover a particular service or not, and I can't exactly remember how far back it was that chiropractic was originally put on the list. I know I can check with the director of the commission, who could give you some more detail on that. But they do look at it from what is the evidence, and so that's why it's only on some lines where there was some evidence that it was helpful. And the reason to take it out of standard wasn't an evidence-based decision. It was based on a fiscal decision on standards package overall. So I think we could get you some information about what they were looking at and why they were considering it, but it does raise that issue of if it really can save money, and I know sitting also on the PEB board myself as a representative of the state, we've looked at back surgery, and it's a very high cost thing, and it is true about the high numbers of cases in Bend, and we don't know what it is in Bend, and we've looked at the PEB data to try to and make sense of that, and we're starting to work with the plan to try to get some handle around that. And so some of the new things going out in the next contract cycle is how could we control those costs, and maybe alternative forms of care might be a methodology in which to achieve that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Since I have an expert here, I'm going to ask that question I wanted to ask earlier. Over the last weekend, I heard some numbers, and I want to ask you if you think they're close to being accurate. But there are about 7,000 plus people who die every year because of a reaction to pharmaceuticals, and they used a number between 49,000 and 96,000, depending on how you could die because of complications or by malpractice, in hospitals and at the hands of physicians. Are those real numbers?
100,000 lives.
Chair Morissette, Senator George, there are some significant data looking at from a patient safety perspective, and it's sort of the essence behind the patient safety medical errors movement. And there is 1,000 lives is one of the Institute for Healthcare Improvements measures, and they've tried to capture some of that quantity. I don't know if those exact numbers are exactly right. I'd have to go back and look, but there is some documentation that the medical errors do occur, not necessarily due to malintention, but systems failure, or accidental. There is accidental reactions you can't predict, but sometimes it is because the wrong medicine went in, and so they strive to get the right care at the right time in the most cost-efficient manner is what a lot of initiatives have been looking at.
Do we have any numbers on how many people die at the hands of a chiropractor? No, I'm serious. Because I think it's an amazing set of numbers just to look at.
Senator Morissette, Senator George, I myself have not seen those, but we can certainly take a look and see if there's what's available.
Okay.
I would ask somebody to turn off their phone or their BlackBerry or whatever it is that's making the noise coming over our system. Not you, Rocky.
No. I'm fine.
Okay. But anyway, there's a device on out there that's causing some problems. Anyway, Rocky, you've succeeded in making a complicated bill even more complicated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Ralph Powers, Charles Elder, and Chris Kirk, would you come up, please? I'm sorry, go ahead. And John, we will hear from you guys a little later.
John Powell?
We're going to save John till last because we can't beat him up at the end.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go ahead and start then. Senator Morissette, thanks for the opportunity to come and talk with you today. Senator Verger, Cruz, Monis Anderson, and George, I appreciate the opportunity to come today. My name is Ralph Prowse, and I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. And it's my first time to come here to testify before a Senate committee. And I'm here to talk in opposition to this bill because, and not to disparage the specialty of chiropractic medicine, I am really concerned about a few of the items that Rocky just alluded to, and that they would be some of the potential unintended consequences of this bill, what could be Trojan horses unintentionally embedded in this bill that could have an enormous impact in a negative way on the citizens in Oregon. Specifically, I'd like to address a couple of issues here. The first is that this bill appears to eliminate the need for any health plan contracting by virtue of mandating the coverage, requiring fair and unbiased payment along health care benefit lines to any willing provider. It effectively eliminates the need for any provider to contract with the health plan. And I want to point out that by eliminating that need, it potentially eliminates the benefits that Oregonians receive by virtue of health plan contracting and the work that health plans do to police its networks. Let me be specific about this. In the first sense, Oregonians achieve certain discounts off charges through health plan contracts. That would be lost. They receive protection against balance billing. They are held harmless when they see an in-network provider. They don't have to be responsible financially for the difference between billed charges and allowed charges. That would be lost. And the protection, the quality assurance protections that are now afforded to Oregonians covered under insurance would be lost. That specifically means the efforts that are now made and the requirements within that contracting process to check and verify the credentials of every practitioner that's credentialed, to determine what their liability, their malpractice liability looks like, to determine whether there are ongoing quality care incidents that have been reported, and those sorts of activities. Those would be lost if we did not require contracting for these services. So I want to point those out as potentially unintended consequences of this bill. The second thing that really concerns me and brought me here today as an internist and a primary care physician is that I think this bill blurs the definition of primary care at a time when we're trying in every way possible to bring about health care reform that would bring more primary care, basic primary care medical services to our citizens. Chiropractors do many great and wonderful things, and some of you have experienced those, but their practice is limited. It's limited pretty much to the spine. This act specifically allows limitation for treatment of conditions involving the thoracic and abdominal viscera, however we want to define that, but the fact of the matter is that over 80% of the costs in healthcare today are driven by diseases of the thoracic organs and abdominal viscera. Let's talk about cancer, heart disease, diabetes. These conditions are what are driving our costs today. When you begin to acuity adjust, you begin to think about how do we manage those conditions. Think about primary care as that physician who was in the nursery when you were born, in the delivery room when you were born, and followed you or your child through their development, made sure that they were developing properly and referred them when they were not, or that made sure that they got the appropriate vaccinations when they should have, dealt with their 2 o'clock in the morning fevers when they were sick and their meningitis, if it was meningitis, admitted them to the hospital and treated them with antibiotics, coordinated the care of the specialists when you were really sick and your child was really sick, followed you through your adolescence, made sure that you received good counseling, that you received the vaccinations that you needed for schooling. Then into adulthood, monitored, evaluated you, and treated you for those chronic conditions, which we all will have someday. That's primary care. I would object to this bill if it called an orthopedic surgeon a primary care physician. I would object if it called an ophthalmologist a primary care or a neurosurgeon. That is not primary care, nor is chiropractic care primary care. And to the extent we blur that distinction, we make an already complicated, overly complicated healthcare system more complicated, and we begin to lose sight of what basic medical services are should be afforded to all Oregonians. I agree with choice. Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield is trying to promote choice. We don't offer managed care contracting as we have learned to understand that anymore. We have a PPO network. That's pretty much what we do. And we also offer chiropractic benefits if employers choose to purchase that. It's not about that, and it's not to disparage the specialty of chiropractic care. But I am very concerned about the unintended consequences of getting around contracting and the benefits that that affords, and the blurring of the line of what primary care really is all about and what it does. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator. Thank you for hearing us. My name is Chris Kirk. I was trained and practiced as an internist here in Oregon and in Washington State. And to tell you a bit more of my story, I left the area to go work for Humana Healthcare because I wanted to learn how to impact systems of care. Subsequent to that, I was a medical director for United Healthcare. Along the way, I acquired a master's degree in medical management. Got the chance to come back to the Northwest, where I hope to never leave again, and worked for a while for Providence Medical Care, and now I'm the medical director for Mid-Valley IPA here in Salem. We manage part of the Oregon Health Plan, which has a chiropractic benefit. We manage a Medicare program, which has a chiropractic benefit. We also manage a MEWA, a Multiple Employer Welfare Association, which is the federal government's term for a self-insurance product created and funded by the doctors in Marion and Polk counties to insure themselves, their staff, and their families. It has a chiropractic benefit. Along the way, wouldn't you know it, I blew out two discs in my back, paralyzed my right leg. At the time, I was chief of medicine for Humana Healthcare. I pretty much had my choice of doing whatever I wanted to do. Went to a surgeon. He looked at me and he said, "Well, Chris, you know the data as well as I do. You decide what you want to do." I didn't have surgical care. Saw a chiropractor. I was in pain and disability for a long time, but I'm recovered and I've never had surgery. I believe there's a place for chiropractic care.
Wait a minute. You saw a chiropractor, you were in pain, but you didn't have surgery. Did the chiropractor help you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I believe there's a place for chiropractic care. I am, again, concerned about the two aspects here that Ralph brought up. One is the language in this bill, and I don't know if it was intended, but as I read it, the way it reads to me is that, again, it's sort of like if you're going to offer a product, then you have to accept any provider who wants to provide care. And I have concerns there about maintaining quality, because we do make an effort to see that people, you know, are maintaining some kind of quality of care. And I'm not thrilled with the quality of care for back pain in the United States. The statistics that went up on the screen there, I think, are very real. I can tell you that I can measure the last time I denied approval for a spinal fusion in hours, not days or weeks. So it's not great. But I am concerned about this issue of saying that we have to have any provider who wants to provide care. And the aspects that Ralph brought up about contracting, we just recently were dealing with an issue with the Oregon Health Plan and around bariatric surgery. And the Health Services Commission is basically in the process of deciding that we should provide bariatric surgery as a benefit. We have a contract with Oregon Health Sciences University
which means we have a fee that will be paid to them. The other certified center for bariatric surgery in Oregon is also in Portland, and I'll not mention their name, but those providers have chosen to leave their system. And just by serendipity, the day before I went back to the Health Services Commission to sit in their deliberations, I'm not a member of the commission, I tried to refer an Oregon Health Plan patient to this other bariatric surgery program, and they called back to say, we're not contracted, you'll need to negotiate another contract with us. In essence, we'll charge you what we'd like. So when you open up the panel, you open up that kind of problem for providers and patients. Now, I'm sorry, Senator Verger, that I'll share with you one of my personal medical stories, if you'll tolerate that just for a bit. Ralph mentioned the contracting, the shopping aspect of a managed care plan, which rarely gets mentioned, but I lived through this. I had trouble with my eyes, thought, I'll get this LASIK surgery. This looks good. I've been watching them develop this technology for some time, and I think it's time. So I went, and my ophthalmologist said, well, Chris, the problem is you've got a cataract. I said, I'm way too young to have a cataract. We agreed on that, but nevertheless, there it was. So he said, you know, your vision is so bad that we should just do clear lens extraction in both your eyes. So, you know, when they do a cataract, they take the bad lens out and they put in an artificial one. And he said, in the other eye, we should do the same thing, even though that lens isn't bad. And then your vision will match. He said, you know, your insurance won't pay for that, but, you know, I could kind of fudge the numbers. And I said, well, let's not do that since, you know, I'm kind of helping to run that program. I wouldn't feel right about that. So we made plans for me to have this surgery at a surgery center, and I called the surgery center up, and I said, I've got to have this done, and my insurance isn't going to cover it, so I wanted to negotiate the price up front. And they said it was $3,000. I said, well, you know, I'm paying cash out of pocket. And, oh, yeah, there's a 20% discount for cash, so it would be $2,400. And so finally I had to quit biting my tongue, and I said, you know, I'm the medical director for United Healthcare, and we have a contract with you, and I'm perfectly aware that our contracted price with you is $800. I don't want to pay $2,400. Well, they let me have the procedure for $800. But, you know, if I'd been some poor person who walked in off the street with no insurance, they'd have been $3,000 out of pocket, or maybe $2,400 if they had the cash. So the bargaining and shopping aspect that the health plans do for care like this makes a huge difference. And we can only do that if we have contracts. And sometimes what we have to do is say to a provider, you know, we'll give you the contract for the better price. If you say to the health plan you have to let anybody be a provider, you lose that negotiation. Now, I'm sure I've lived in places where those kinds of negotiations led to a small panel and problems with lack of choice. I think that's a real issue. Here in Salem, we're lucky enough that virtually every doc in town is on our panel. And I think that in the Portland area, the panels are pretty big and choice is pretty good. You know, maybe we need some legislation that addresses how restricted a plans panel could be. But the downside of opening it up to just any willing provider, in my opinion, way outweighs the benefit. And again, and then that next point is back to who's a PCP. I in my vision, you know, chiropractors have a rather, they don't, you know, have a somewhat broad scope of care. but I still view them as a specialist. I view OBGYNs as specialists. Some places they have the right to be PCPs. In my whole career, I've only seen one who wanted to do the job. It's a real tough job, and they'd rather focus on their area of focus. I wouldn't want a dermatologist to be a PCP. I wouldn't want a neurosurgeon to be a PCP. So the language is in the bill as it's written, I think has, I hope, the unintended consequence of blurring that distinction. And if the intent is to allow access to chiropractic care, the solution isn't to declare them a PCP. That's apples and oranges. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator George.
We had four legislators in here who told the story about, you know, the hope for their health was a chiropractor. All right, you had that same experience. And I had the same concern when I look at the bill, as you've expressed. How do we get the balance so that I do have a choice, you had a choice, at the same time not open the door wide open to where you might have the cost just skyrocket? Well, you know, if we're going to look at this, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of saving money. Yeah, offering choice and saving money. I think it can be done. How do we do it? Have you guys looked at this as how do we rewrite the bill to provide the kind of security we need, you know, still maintaining the management guide, but at the same time giving flexibility and choice to the to our constituents? I'm not sure I have a right answer for you. I'm not sure the answer is legislative. There's been a lot of discussion back and forth about why are things this way. It's a lot of factors. I can assure you that in standard medical school, the teachings are in some ways in conflict with the tenets of chiropractic care. It's a fact of life. Nevertheless, we have doctors of osteopathy, DOs, who do spinal manipulation as part of their practice, and their practices, they're licensed as physicians, just like MDs. You know, that Senator Verger said, boy, look at these millions and millions of dollars up here. It makes you wonder if maybe somebody's doing something for the profit motive. Well, there's nobody in this room who hasn't wondered about that at one time or another. And I personally spend a great deal of my time trying to keep that in rein. Now, the same people who would tell you that the patients have a right to have a choice to go to the chiropractor would argue that they have a choice to have surgery, even if the science says it's no good. My personal opinion is that in Oregon we've done a lot of really good work on evidence-based medicine and paying for things that have at least a reasonable chance of succeeding, and we need to do more. And maybe the answer is, you know, we need to have evidence-based medicine publicized for chiropractic care.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just follow up on that. We have our office health policy and research department, and that's what they do with our medical plan, where they take evidence-based research and look at, okay, what is this going to cost us? Doing this procedure. Anyway, that's what they're supposed to be doing.
Well, they
and
are.
So we have a process for that. So anyway.
They are. I sit with them frequently, and I've sat on committees with the senator for evidence-based medicine out of OHSU. They've done a lot of good work, like I said, and we need more.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, if I could respond.
Introduce yourself again, please.
I'm Ralph Prowse, again from Regents. Because of the potential unintended consequences that I mentioned here and that Chris has mentioned, the issues around contracting, the issues around the blurring of the definition of primary care, the limitations and exclusions that you find under Section 5, and then the additional limitations and exclusions relative to Section 7, that's the that refers to Oregon Health Plan exclusion, PEB, and other employees of cities and counties, etc. Because this bill is so replete with these issues, I think this bill is fatally flawed as drafted. I don't think this bill could be redrafted. I think you need to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Other comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Chairman Morissette, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you. I'm Dr. Charles Elder from Portland. I'm representing Kaiser Permanente of the Northwest. Seated behind me and available to answer questions if needed is Harry Stathos, the Chief Financial Officer and Vice President of Finance for Northwest Permanente. First, I'd like to start by telling you a little bit about my background. I'm a general internist, and I've been a primary care physician and continue as a practicing general internist with Kaiser Permanente now for 16 years. Kaiser Permanente of the Northwest is a managed care organization serving 479,000 members in Oregon and in Washington. In addition to my role as a primary care physician, I serve in two additional capacities for Kaiser Permanente. I serve as a clinical investigator at the Kaiser Permanente Center for Health Research. I've participated in several NIH-funded studies evaluating chiropractic, naturopathic, acupuncture, Chinese medicine, and other complementary and alternative modalities of care. I've also published in the medical literature in the areas of complementary and alternative medicine and complementary and alternative medicine utilization. In addition, I currently oversee the alternative medicine programs for Kaiser Permanente Northwest. I also have a background in quality management, having served as the physician director for quality at Kaiser Sunnyside Medical Center for 5 years, and having served in the past as a trustee for the Oregon Medical Professional Review Organization. So with that background, I'll also emphasize that I view myself as a strong advocate for the appropriate and evidence-based integration of alternative medicine into our healthcare system when medically appropriate. However, we believe that this bill is not the way to accomplish that. We feel that the bill would have severe adverse impacts on both the quality and the cost of care for our patients. And my reasons for that have already been detailed by my colleagues here, and I'll give you our angle on those issues. We agree, of course, that patients need reasonable choice when selecting a primary care physician. However, at the same time, in order to manage the cost and quality of care, health plans need a reasonable level of control over who is providing the care. Section 2 of this bill would render it essentially impossible to achieve appropriate quality management among primary care physicians. For example, when one of our patients selects a primary care clinician, the patient knows that that clinician has been screened by us and has undergone rigorous evaluation in terms of his or her credentials and competence. So our quality management activities provide patients with a layer of reassurance or quality control that this bill would rob the patients of. The same thing holds true, in fact, in our approach to chiropractic care. We have a network of chiropractic physicians who provide spinal care to our patients when medically indicated. When patients are referred to that network, they know that they're being referred to a chiropractic practitioner who has met high quality assurance standards in terms of competence, and training. And the same holds true at the level of ongoing monitoring of practice. In my practice as a primary care physician, I receive constant ongoing feedback
regarding how my outcomes and my practice compare to the community and to my peers. Such feedback enables me and my colleagues to, on an ongoing basis, educate ourselves, improve ourselves, and provide the optimal quality of excellent and effective patient care.
I apologize.
Yes, okay.
We have to be out of this room by 5, and there's one other person that I want to hear before we...
And I'm almost done.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. So this bill severely compromises our ability to manage that quality. The second piece I'll mention relates to Section 3.2A, mandating that chiropractic physicians be available as primary care physicians for provision of medical care. Again, chiropractors do a terrific job within their scope of practice, spine care, back and neck pain, as the anecdotes which we heard speak to. However, primary care medicine involves a whole range of other stuff that goes beyond that scope of practice. Diabetes management, heart disease management, management of psychiatric conditions, etc. So again, the issue of blurring what is meant by primary care and confusing the patients and the physician as to what is a primary care physician. What constitutes good primary care goes way beyond the scope of just spinal care and pain management. So I'll conclude then, since we're short on time, but would emphasize that, yes, we do have the concern. I believe, Senator Cruz, it was you who asked the question, and I'll answer on behalf of our organization, that, yes, we would be quite concerned that this bill would render it difficult or impossible for us to manage our panel of patients in the most cost-effective and high-quality way.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We are going to take one more civic testimony. Russ Hentz, Willamette Dental, would you come up, please?
Thank you.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, this room is going to be used at 5 o'clock, and so we're always on a deadline. Otherwise, we could stay over a little bit to hear the testimony. We will continue this discussion at a later date. Introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm Russell House. I'm general counsel of Willamette Dental, and we're here hearing the testimony. I would have thought this bill was about chiropractic alone, and we certainly wouldn't opine about chiropractic care, but the bill is broader, and I think Mr. King raised that point. Or to open up freedom of choice of provider for all managed care organizations in the state. Our Willamette Dental has been in business for 37 years in the state of Oregon. We serve approximately 360,000 patients in the Pacific Northwest, and we're a staff model organization. Our dentists are employed, and this bill covers dentistry. So I think it's the unintended consequences of this bill that Mr. King raised that is concerning to companies like Willamette Dental and other managed care organizations. Staff model organizations employ their providers. They're paid on a salary. They're not paid on a per-procedure basis. So it's an entirely different model. And if you're worried about competition out there in the marketplace, keep in mind that competition among different delivery models is a very important thing that you've created here in Oregon, and that you shouldn't undermine that. And organizations such as Willamette have been operating in Kaiser Dental and other dental managed care organizations in the Pacific Northwest for decades. So we're opposed to this bill because of the breadth of the bill and some of the confusing aspects of the bill that would seem to constrict the ability of a staff model dental managed care organization to operate.
Okay. Questions? Thank you very much. John, we've got room. Oh, boy, that didn't take long for you to get up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to be late for the next hearing at 5 o'clock.
Oh,
I can't wait to get down there.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, and thank you very much for hearing me. Mr. Chairman, I just simply would start with my own brief anecdote and won't go into the details.
Oh, you went to a chiropractor?
I too have a back problem, and I went to my primary care physician, and I asked him to send me to a surgeon.
Yeah.
It was 2 months before a legislative session. I could hardly hold my neck up. And he examined me, asked me questions, and then shook his head and said, what's wrong? And he said, there's not a surgeon in this area that would put a knife to you right now. And with anti-inflammatories, I was well in 2 days, and I thought I needed surgery. The only reason I ever got the prescription refilled is the other one was so old that I threw it away and got another one for when I travel, just in case I have any kind of a flare-up.
And your insurance covered that, right?
Mr. Chairman, my deductible covered it. I have a $1,000 deductible, and I paid the bill.
Just wanted to be sure.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think the message here is a little blurred, because this bill does do much more than pit some kind of medical treatment against a different kind of medical treatment. And I want to refer back to the chart that was up on the screen about workers' comp costs and who gets paid. That chart would have been much different prior to 1991, before the workers' comp reforms. That chart was a list of expenditures in the workers' compensation system where chiropractic is limited. And so it's a different chart. If you looked at a chart that had who gets the money out of personal injury protection coverage in auto insurance, it would be much different than that chart showed. So I think some of those numbers have to be put in context as well. But clearly, what this bill does is undermine any form of contracting. Regents plans do offer choice. You do not have to go to a contracted facility or practitioner. You will pay, if you go to a non-contracted provider, more out of pocket in most cases. You do have choice. The purchaser under Regents Health Plans can purchase on group policies chiropractic benefit. There are other companies that sell complementary insurance in addition to your insurance, which covers chiropractic. So there is freedom of choice, both in terms of purchasing for services and in the Regents plan. And I think it's why we have the largest number of lives in the state covered. It does offer choice. The Kaiser model, I would fight to keep it. It's a great competitive model. It provides good quality health care. It's a leader in electronic record keeping, like all of medicine should be. And it's a great steward of the public trust, I think, in terms of providing health care. This totally undermines it. Just guts it. It guts the Regents system of trying to be the Chevrolet and contract with as many possible physicians as we can, about 98% of them. But ironically, where did we just have trouble with contracting with physicians? Bend, Oregon. And we stood our ground. They came back to the bargaining table, and we reached a compromise on what it would cost the citizens of Bend to buy health insurance and get good medical services. So we think this bill is not reconcilable and cannot be amended to at least get our support for it. Thank you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, John.
No questions.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead.
I just wanted to note for the record that the committee received testimony, written testimony from Representative Tomei in support of Senate Bill 407 and from Randy Zimmer, legislative analyst for the City of Eugene, in opposition to Senate Bill 407.
Okay. Mr. Chair. I guess I have some questions. I'll start off on Section 1 and why we're redefining terms already defined in statute. And it seems like an incredibly comprehensive list. And, Ms. Chair, I have questions on other sections. I'm okay with Section 4.
Okay. Other comments? We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 407 and leave open the possibility of coming back, and we'll see if there are amendments to be offered and so on. There is some support for the concept, for the bill, for the concept. I think that it's obvious that there are some concerns about the language for unintended consequences and so on that probably should be dealt with, and we will just wait and see what happens. Thank you.
Adjourn.
We are adjourned.